Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name is John, and with me, as always, is Steve. How are you doing,
John? John. I'm grooving, man. How are you? Things are opening back up. Summer's coming up. It's all looking up from here.
Wow, you're so optimistic. Well, there are a lot of vaccines out there. You saw the Tokyo Olympics. They're not going to have any international travelers, just domestic people showing up at the arena, domestic fans.
Yeah, I saw that. It's quite a bummer. I figured that they would have some sort of vaccine passport, some sort of, you know, maybe blockchain-enabled vaccine passport, yeah. But whatever. It's still the Olympics.
Blockchain-enabled with a buy now, pay later option and from your phone only. Well, those phone apps look like they're very simple, but there's a lot of interconnections, a lot of things going on in the background. As usual, is it the duck that's paddling or the swan that's paddling so hard underneath that makes it look so smooth on the water? Yeah, yes. Yeah. And a lot of what makes that happen and allows more services is open banking, being able to connect different services together so it looks as if it's seamless while we're all working very hard in the background. Fortunately, we have a guest that can help us understand this area a bit better. We have Eyals Sivan, the head of open banking at Axway, and also happens to be the host of the Mr. Open Banking podcast. Thanks for joining us on the show today.
Great to be here.
Yeah. So Axway is doing some interesting work in an interesting area. How are you guys contributing to making that process smooth as silk as we portrayed here?
Smooth as silk, I think, is a little generous, perhaps. But certainly, when I joined Axway early last year, I really came on to try and sharpen our focus on the open banking space in two different ways. One, to establish Axway as one of the thought leaders in the open banking world, in the open banking community. And second, to take our industry-leading API management tooling and really try and add the pieces to it that you need to create a comprehensive, cohesive open banking solution. So it's been a great ride so far. We have recently started an open banking program in Brazil, one of the most exciting open banking regions out there right now, where we're working with some of the top banks to try and help them go to market, not just with an open banking solution that gives them compliance, but helps them move beyond compliance and really helps them become part of the economy of the 21st century.
Before we get into the whole Brazil space, I'd love to ask you this. So I know that you're based in Toronto, right? And right. I was recently reading an article about the different approaches to open banking and banking as a service in the US and the UK. So in the US, it seems to be more of a market-driven approach. And then in the UK, you have PSD1, PSD2. And I'm wondering, what is the Canadian model and how does that differ from the UK and the US model?
Mm-hmm. So in order to answer that question, it begs another question, a relatively obvious one. What exactly is open banking? When you start with that sort of baseline, you can compare and contrast the different approaches being taken around the world. A lot of folks equate open banking with regulation. They immediately think this is a regulatory move, but that is actually not the case. Some regions, like in Europe, where you see PSD2 or the UK, where the OBIE has come up with UK open banking, are very much driven by regulation. That's the case in Brazil as well. There is a regulatory regime. However, other regions, such as the US, Singapore, and others, are taking a more market-driven approach, where usually large banks, incumbents, will form some sort of consortium. Often they'll invite other members to that consortium, and they'll work together to develop some sort of an open banking regime. But in both cases, there's something that binds those two approaches together. And the watchword here is standard. The idea of open banking is to develop a common, open, shared standard for the secure exchange of financial data. Note that my definition does not include the word regulation. It can be driven by regulation. It can be driven by consortiums run by private companies. But in both cases, they're trying to move towards a common shared standard. So if you compare what's happening in Europe, where you have PSD2 that's already launched and so on, you could say that they're actually quite mature. They're now on a couple of versions in, and a lot of banks have adopted, and the standard is in many ways pretty well baked, while there's still some work to do. In the US, you don't really have as much agreement on a common standard. There's great organizations there like FDX that are trying to make that happen, but you have incredible fintech adoption, some of the most innovative ideas out there. And really, the groundwork is being laid for that 21st century economy and the digital banking consumer that expects those new kinds of experiences. So eventually, I believe that the regulatory approach and the market-driven approach will sort of meet in the middle. I think what Canada is trying to do in true Canadian form is take a bit of a wait-and-see approach, try and learn from what works and what doesn't work from the regions that have already gone down this road, and indeed leverage the technologies and standards that those different regions have developed to accelerate adoption of open banking here in Canada. Now, in my opinion, it's going a little bit too slowly. It could be going faster, but I don't begrudge them the idea of wait and see and making sure that they get this done right. I myself am a member of the OBIC in Canada, the Open Banking Initiative Canada, that's trying to push for a common standard that's going to bind the big banks, mid-sized banks, fintechs, and everyone else together. Some of the larger banks have joined FDX Canada, which is a Canadian offshoot of FTX in the US that's also trying to develop a standard. So I think we're still in the relatively early stages here in Canada, but it does seem like given the choice between a regulatory approach and a market-driven approach, that we are leaning more towards the market-driven approach, at least so far.
And one of the things your company actually does is that you're not building APIs to connect companies. You're sort of helping other companies manage their APIs and how they access open banking services. Can you walk us through an overview of what your product does for these companies?
Yeah, sure. So Axway has been doing enterprise integration for over 20 years. We're sort of experts at it. There's a lot of companies out there that are hot upstarts in the API management space. I'll avoid naming any names. But Axway's been doing this for a very long time. As a result, we work with file transfer systems. We work with SOA gateways, ERP, all the way to the new cool stuff like microservices and service mesh. And we can sort of bring all that together. What we've added on top is what we call an open banking accelerator. It essentially adds the different pieces that you need on top of your API management platform to give you that cohesive open banking solution out of the box. Axway's actually done open banking for clients all around the world under different regimes. But until recently, those have been ad hoc, which is to say we engage with a client, they adopt our platform, and then we go and customize it for their open banking needs. What we're trying to do in Brazil is take the learnings from all those different regions where we've already implemented open banking and put them together into an out-of-the-box solution. That solution really tries to take the technical complexity out of creating a developer environment that is attractive, intuitive, draws developers in, and gets them to want to work with your bank and build on your APIs. We really do think of this as a long-term play. This isn't just some more APIs. This isn't just a regulatory thing. This is really about preparing our clients for the next 10, 20 years of banking, which is really going to look radically different from what's come before.
How do you think this actually will be different in the future? It seems like there's so much investment nowadays, so much, there's a big fear within banking that they'll become the dumb pipes for this stuff. So how do you foresee the open banking space in the next, say, 5 to 10 years?
No one knows. Anybody who says they can predict the future and they know exactly how this is going to end up is lying. They just can't know. And that's the nature of innovation. Situations changing on the ground every day. Different companies are showing up. Different standards are showing up. Breaches happen that change the game. So trying to predict exactly where this is going to go is very difficult. Banks who are already on their digital transformation journeys understand this. They know that when you talk about innovation at large, it's not about predicting the future. It's about having an organization that is agile and nimble enough to adjust to an ever-changing situation. And a lot of banks, the smarter ones, are already on this road. They're trying to transform how they operate, usually their IT operations, but often all the way up to business, to be more agile, to be able to innovate faster, increase their release frequency, and compete better with some of these technology upstarts that move a lot faster than they do usually. By the way, that goes not just for the upstarts, but for the large GAFAs out there as well, the Googles and Facebooks and Amazons, who are in earnest moving into financial services. I think this is a new situation for banks. They're facing competition from non-traditional players that offer services that look a whole lot like banking services, even when those players don't necessarily have a banking license. And that is forcing banks to up their game and try and innovate faster and offer new things. It also has another effect, and that is tearing down the walled gardens that banks often build around themselves. I've been in this business for about 25 years. Before I joined Axway, I was with a major Canadian bank for 15 years. And when you talk about business strategies there, you often hear the term wallet share. The idea being as many products per customer as possible, try and keep them from banking with others, try and make sure they have a relationship with your brand, et cetera. That mindset has really shifted. With the rise of fintech, with the rise of alternative financial products from large technology players, as well as from wholly new areas such as DeFi and crypto, this has really forced banks to rethink their relationship with the customer. They've realized that if their customers want these services, these capabilities, such as seeing all your accounts in one place or the ability to easily transfer money in seconds, if they don't provide these services, they are going to lose these customers to these technology players. So how can they tear down that walled garden and incorporate themselves, embed themselves into these experiences so that they maintain those relationships, maintain that trust, and maintain their accounts? So what you see the smart banks doing is a couple of things. A, moving towards a platform model. And this is very common all around the world. This is banks essentially saying, I am a platform. I'm going to expose my capabilities as APIs, and I'm going to invite third parties to build on these capabilities and create whole new experiences. And that brings me to B, which is unbundling. This idea that instead of having a single front door where you try and push customers in and sell them as many products as possible, instead you have 100 small front doors. You break down what you do into all these different unbundled capabilities, and you try to embed yourself into as many different experiences as possible. You use the term dumb pipes. Yes, that is indeed a term you hear out there when banks are worried about becoming starved utilities. But I am more optimistic. I think that's a little doom and gloom. I would challenge them by saying, would you call Netflix the dumb pipe of movies, right? The fact that you
sometimes,
often...
There are days that I feel like that.
But of course, it's been a boon to them. And the fact is, they don't necessarily own the box that you're getting the Netflix on. There's no such thing as a Netflix box. And until recently, they didn't really own the movie either. They were the pipe. Yes, they had a UX and they had preferences, but they started to add that value incrementally. I think if banks can find ways to embed themselves in all of these experiences, there are areas of value that they can mine that they simply didn't think of before. And that's the real challenge that they have to face. How do they reinvent their business to take advantage of these completely new kinds of value?
Yeah, that brings up a lot of issues, actually. What am I most curious about, I guess? I've heard a lot of discussion of regulatory arbitrage, where companies can offer bank-like products without all the regulatory and compliance burden. I don't know if these are all questions, but just things that I'm thinking about. Which of the big banks are doing well? You see a lot of press about JP Morgan Chase and building blockchain products, and they have a big innovation group, and maybe they just have a better PR department. I'm not sure. So yeah, a lot of things going on there. So it will be kind of interesting to see how this develops. Maybe this will be on, I'm thinking if there's competing platforms, if they'll be interoperable too, I guess, down the line. What do you think about that? Let's just take that one.
Well, that's exactly the point of open banking. A common, open, shared standard for the secure exchange of financial data.
Oh, industry-wide standard. Okay, I see. So you're building, it's not like you're doing like an Apple App Store and it doesn't work with the Google Store. It's more like an industry-wide kind of thing that everybody shares, whether that's from top down from the government or between industry, just some way.
Exactly right. And it's common throughout the industry. And the key point is that no one owns it. Effectively, anyone can license it without really having to pay a royalty to anybody else. There are many equivalents out there that we're very much familiar with. Bluetooth is one. Another one is IP, or all the protocols built on top of IP, like HTTP. Nobody owns HTTP, and heaven forbid that somebody did. I'm old enough to remember the days of CompuServe and America Online. And
oh my God, PBS how old services. Are you?
I know. Don't remind me.
The Prodigy, do you remember Prodigy?
Yeah, sure.
I had a Prodigy account, yeah.
I had Prodigy. That was my first connection. Go ahead.
Not at all. So for the young kids out there, those were BBSs, bulletin board services, and you would use your modem to dial right into a particular server, and here you are in the walled garden that is, say, AOL. AOL was pretty feature-rich. So was CompuServe. So were others. They have graphical user interfaces in some cases. I remember Sierra Online. You could walk your little avatar around. The early internet, functionally, had nothing on those services. But we all know how that story ended. And the reason is because of common open standards. The internet standards that were put in place allowed anybody to publish a website, allowed anybody to be able to create content and share it with the world. That is what open banking is bringing to financial services, a way to level the playing field so that when you're getting account information, you're getting transaction data, you're moving money around, you're saving it, everybody's speaking the same language. Once you have that common standard in place, you can build on top of there and focus on what makes your bank unique. The standards that are currently being put in place are regional. So all of the open banking regimes out there are tied to a particular nation, usually. In the case of Europe, you've got the European bloc that is sharing a common standard. Although even there, PSD2 has turned into multiple actual standards. There's the Berlin group, there's STET in France. But I would put good money down that eventually we will find a way to have all of these different global standards become interoperable amongst themselves as well.
So they'll have these meetings where they'll try to reconcile, just like a lot of other standards, they come up with one. So it sounds like you're describing the very early days of this kind of thing.
Very much so. And that's another interesting aspect. If you speak to folks in the UK or in Europe, some of them will say, oh, open banking, that's so 2 years ago. But you speak to regions that are just getting started, like the US, and they're just now warming up to the term open banking. I'd say someone like Brazil is right in the middle. Overall, yes, very early days globally. Certainly some regions are ahead, notably the UK, Europe, and Australia in terms of standards development, but very, very early days in terms of building this ecosystem around the world.
Interesting. So it seems like a lot of the benefits of open banking are sort of seen through the lens of, you know, banks and service providers and all this stuff, and, you know, how this will create customer stickiness, it'll lead to better security. What are the benefits from an end consumer perspective, other than just being able to see their data in one single platform? What's the benefit of customers pushing for and getting access to all these open banking tools?
That's very Steve. What do I get out of it?
What's in it for me?
Yeah.
Love it. That's a great question. And let me start by saying that ultimately, that is intended to be the main beneficiary of open banking, the end consumer. That is really what this is all about. Banks are really forced to find their way in this new world. Especially the incumbent banks sort of liked the way that it's been all these years, where they have oligopoly and a walled garden around their services, and it's the big red one competing against the big blue one, as one of my guests once described. This is different. Walls have been torn down. Now they're competing with 100 players that no one's ever heard of before, with new ones showing up every day. That is a tough environment for them, but a wonderful environment for end users like us. because we now have access to completely new kinds of financial services that we couldn't have even imagined before. The most obvious things are being able to send money to each other in seconds instead of having to wait a day or 2 days or a week, to do it for free, which is sort of a new idea. Banks often charge some fee to be able to move the money around. But that's pretty simple. The other one you hear a lot about that's pretty simple is show me all my stuff in one place, aggregators. The fact is aggregators have been around for more than a decade. Certainly the ones that are powered by open banking standards are more secure, more efficient, can access more banks. But the use case of bring all my accounts into one place and let me see them together is relatively simple. It's a well-understood use case. However, once you get into more advanced scenarios like alternative credit checks, where suddenly I can use open banking to look at your history across multiple accounts, potentially some non-financial accounts such as your social media activity, with your permission, of course, to do an alternative credit check for people who have thin files. That's something open banking empowers. It's a great app out of the UK called Snoop that will look at your transaction history across multiple accounts and figure out where you've got weird subscriptions that you aren't using or fees that are being charged that look off pattern, and it will save you money. It will tell you at the end of the month, here is a bunch of transactions that I think really you should take a second look at and perhaps do without. And it will even automate the cancellation of those subscriptions. So an agent that's sort of using open banking to watch your money and make sure that you're not losing any of it. That's just one example of many out there that leverage open banking to pull together data from different sources to create a kind of layer of intelligence that help you save your money, move your money, and invest money in a more intelligent way. That's what open banking is really all about.
So if we gave you a magic wand, what kind of obstacle would you get rid of on the technology side that would make all this move forward quicker?
The interesting part is that most of the technology is there. There's some stuff to be worked out, but a lot of the foundational pieces are already in place. It's really about driving adoption among the different players in the ecosystem, getting them to agree on the standard. And that really is all about consumer education, in my opinion. It's part of the reason why I started the Mr. Open Banking podcast. It seemed to me like the missing piece was that average people needed to be educated that this was even possible, that the ability to send money immediately or see all your accounts in one place or some of the fancier scenarios I described were actually things you could do, were actually things that you should be demanding from your bank and indeed from your financial system in your country. And if the excuses you were hearing were, oh, this is unsafe, or this is going to cause some economic instability, that is just not the case. It's good for everybody. It raises all boats. It not only creates new products that consumers can take advantage of, but it increases the size of the overall pie for the banks that are already in the game.
So who do you like today? Obviously, Axway is doing a great job, but what other fintechs do you think are really doing a good job of putting this together or building tools?
Plaid comes to mind. I think they're fascinating for a couple of different reasons. One, they're straddling two different worlds. You've got Plaid UK that is very much a supporter of the UK open banking standards and open banking in general. But then you've got Plaid US that really has created a lot of value out of the screen scraping method, the non-open banking method of pulling all your accounts together into one place, and letting you access them through a single API. So far, they've been straddling those two worlds relatively elegantly, and they've introduced a non-screen scraping-based API called Plaid Direct in the US, which allows banks to start moving towards the right way of doing this, and are really preparing themselves for adoption of a standard in the US. It's also worth noting they were purchased by Visa, and then the deal got called off. So I think they learned a lot from that interaction. I think Visa must have learned a lot from that. So I like what Plaid is doing. I like that they're trying to make a clean transition from this old world of screen scraping to this new world of open banking. Another one I like is Railsbank out of the Nordics. They are quite clever in terms of making it very, very easy to be able to access lots and lots of banks via open banking APIs exclusively. Tink is another one of the Nordics. In general, the Nordics are a great region to power some of this stuff. You've got some incredible talent coming out of there. They really were some of the leaders, some of the pioneers in terms of building some of these applications. So Tink is another one that provides a very modern open banking based aggregator, and they add more and more banks every day, make it very, very easy to access backend services. And then in terms of the fintechs, the front end, I really like stuff like Snoop that allows you to add some intelligence on the consumer side for monitoring your services and so on.
Interesting. On the flip side, you mentioned, of course, Tink and Plaid and the Nordics and sort of the good players. Do you care to go over the bad players, or maybe not the players that maybe whose practices shouldn't be replicated? And I'm thinking here of, I'm going to call somebody out, players like maybe Yodlee that rely on screen scraping, which is not a secure way to get your data. But what practices or players would you like to see less of in the future that you're building here?
So certainly screen scraping. And just as I would applaud Plaid for trying to make that jump, I would sort of sneer at some of the aggregators who are clinging to the existing way of doing things, like Yodlee, like MX. I think they're inevitably going to start to move in that direction, but they have built their business on providing those adaptive layers that are ultimately becoming commoditized through open banking. I'm sure they realize that and are going to have to eventually adjust, but it's not an easy thing to do. In terms of others who I would sort of point to, I'm not going to name any names, but in general, I would call out those large incumbent banks out there who are still trying to resist this movement and trying to say, no, I'm going to create proprietary ways of doing this, or I'm going to be the hub that's going to control all of the interactions across the ecosystem, and I'm going to sign up all the TPPs and own the standard. That is like trying to be the CompuServe or the AOL that decides they're going to beat the internet. I don't think it's going to work. I would caution them to not try and swim against the tide.
So that's some good advice for the large players. How about any advice you have for smaller fintechs or ones that are just getting started? Any things you guys wish you guys had avoided?
Well, we're still relatively early in, as I said, sharpening our focus on this open banking space. So I hope we haven't done anything horribly wrong. Maybe I'll find out later. But I think that in our case, and this is likely the case in a lot of organizations that are deciding whether to take the jump into this world, it's really trying to get the belief in place that there's something here. When you're dealing with a new space like this, it's sometimes difficult to build a business case around truly embracing open banking when you don't know what the future holds. I would draw a comparison to conversations that happened in the Blockbuster boardroom, where they knew Netflix was there. It wasn't like a surprise attack. Netflix was there for years while Blockbuster was still in business. And they actually sat in the boardroom and said, these Netflix guys, are they real competitors? And the answer came back, no. Is there really an opportunity to move into delivery or maybe streaming? No, we're a video rental store. And again, we know how that story ended. So I think that one of the challenges we're facing at Axway, but it's, to be honest, it's been great. The executive team is enormously supportive and it hasn't been that much of a challenge. But trying to get the executive teams to go, okay, despite me not having a lot of historical data backing this up as a business case, I have that belief, I have that faith that this is where the tide is going. Clearly the banking industry is being transformed by this, and we're going to position ourselves to take advantage of that, despite not having that historical record, because ultimately we're dealing with something entirely new. I think that's the challenge.
Yeah, that's interesting. The way you frame your company is important that way. You see like a large oil and gas company saying, well, we're energy. We're not tied to petroleum. We can do solar. We provide the energy. And similarly, I guess Blockbuster maybe should have invested in the idea that they're entertainment at home, whatever form that takes.
Indeed.
It's kind of funny. I like when I see like, we're not a car company, we're a transport, personal transport. And that unlocks you from being a gas powered car or whatever.
Exactly. And you're starting to see that shift towards true consumer focus happen in the banking sector. I love some of the activity that we're seeing in Southeast Asia, where the branding around banks has really started to recognize this unbundling, embedding kind of approach. One of my favorite examples is DBS, who is out of Singapore, and they recently had a tagline. They had an ad campaign that I thought absolutely nailed it. And there's a couple of good examples out there, but I loved theirs. Their tagline for the ad campaign they ran was "Bank less, live more." And I thought that nailed it, because the fact is people do not wake up in the morning and think, wow, I'm going to the bank today. It's going to be great. I love my bank and I have a special relationship with my bank. People do not feel about their bank typically the way they feel about, say, Apple or Nintendo or someone like that. It's just not that kind of relationship. So with that realization, I think the smart banks out there are realizing, look, I am not here to sell mortgages and credit cards. I'm here to help a customer when they need help, when they're trying to do something else, like buy a car or plan a wedding, and they need access to funds. I want to be there. I want to be there wherever and whenever they need me, but no more than that. I don't want to force them to deal with me. I don't want them to come to branches if they don't want to. I don't want to force them to call me if they don't want to. I don't want to force them to move money arbitrarily between two different buckets just to make sure that they don't get charged fees they don't want to get charged. Put the customer first, be there when they need you, and then disappear into the background when they don't.
No, you should bend to our system. Here's how our process works. And yeah, I've been in the branch where somebody said, well, this name is in this field and it should be, and I'm like, no, I don't need to know about your systems.
Exactly.
You should be an expert on that. And I don't want to know. Well, great. It sounds like you're doing a great job to making an easier, better future, providing the tools for that. So thanks for being on the podcast.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
That's A.L. Savan, the head of open banking at Axway. And as you might be able to tell from listening to this, he's the Mr. Open Banking podcast host, which you should listen to if you want to get more information about open banking and new developments for sure. Please hit subscribe to keep up with the latest in fintech news, and thank you for listening.